Venda had been very careful about leaving a minimal footprint on Thalia. Jason was worried they'd be spotted, or that Venda would spook and disappear on them. He'd hidden from the Confed this long, so it was plausible that he had escape plans in place that would quickly take him out of their sight and beyond their ability to find him again. The one hope he had was that the family they were assuming existed would slow him down enough for them to approach and convince him that they weren't a threat and to trust them. Given the amount of Confed firepower converging on their position, Jason would have no choice but to go for a quick extraction and get Venda to safety where he could be more thoroughly debriefed.
"Captain, we have a Confed warship entering the system," Doc said over the open channel. "The chatter from the ships in orbit is that it's an older battleship named the Solas. There's some talk of a system-wide quarantine being set up, but so far there's only the one battle wagon and her two escort ships."
"Keep me posted," Jason said. "Any word on our strike team?"
"Negative. They'll likely be inserting with one of Intel Section's civilian ships."
"Thanks for the heads up," Jason said.
"How far out are we?"
Crusher asked through a yawn.
"Less than an hour to go," Jason said. "We'll make it there just as the sun is coming up. This is less than optimal, assuming that there will be an increase in civilian traffic around that time."
The rest of the trip passed in silence, right until Jason rolled the now conspicuous vehicle down into the narrow streets of the community Venda Se lived in. Just as Cage identified the multifamily dwelling, a sleek air car swooped down, and they watched as eight black-clad beings dove from the open doors and began taking a position around the residence.
"Damn it! Hold on!"
Jason mashed the accelerator and aimed the lumbering truck right for the air car that was still hovering just half a meter off the ground.
"What are you doing?"
Crusher yelled.
"Denying the enemy," Jason grinned.
The air car had not only brought the team here, but was obviously going to be their method of exfiltration once they grabbed Venda. The pilot was too focused on the building and looked up too late as the truck closed in enough to set off a proximity alert. Before they could climb or dodge out of the way, the heavy truck slammed into the tail section, crumpling the drive and power plant and sending the failing air car skidding across the ground where it hit two members of the strike team that were slower than their comrades.
"Neat,"
Crusher grunted, and kicked the door so hard it flew out of the frame and landed 15 meters away. Before the rest of the Confed team could figure out if the impact was an attack or an accident, the big warrior opened up with two massive plasma rifles. He had to sacrifice accuracy for speed, as he was trying to keep any of them from returning fire while Jason and Cage took up position, but he still managed to take out two more.
"Four more left!"
Jason rolled out of the driver's seat and ran full tilt to the wreckage of the air car, while Crusher laid down cover fire. He quickly drew a bead on two targets that were helpfully standing in a line relative to his position. When he caressed the trigger, the railgun's hypersonic round nearly tore both operators in half. The two remaining members of the doomed strike team turned to run, intent on getting around the side of the building to use it as cover. Switching to low velocity mode, Jason abandoned his own cover and gave chase so that they wouldn't have the time to stop and set up an ambush. While Crusher followed after him, Cage ran up to the multifamily dwelling and began working on the security system from the outer door. Jason rounded the corner of the building, his speed surprising the enemy operatives, and took down one more with a quick burst as they were in the process of planting an anti-personnel mine on the exterior wall. The last remaining member of the team was stunned to the point of inaction, giving Jason the opportunity to close the distance and slam a boot into his chest.
"I really did expect much more from a Confed strike team. Your reputation isn't all that well deserved, apparently," Jason said.
"Confed strike team!"
The being on the ground laughed and spit bright purple blood out onto the ground.
"We're not Confed, you moron. We're private contractors here to extract the family before the Confed gets here."
Jason looked at Crusher with a slightly sick expression.
"Oops," he said.
"You killed my whole team before even asking who we were? What sort of..."
An explosion near the front of the building cut off whatever it was saying. Jason wheeled and looked up as pieces of the truck they'd arrived in began raining down onto the neighboring buildings.
"Damn,"
Jason muttered.
The element of surprise can be a fickle mistress, Crusher said sagely, while stepping out of the way of the bigger chunks. Just think, if you hadn't killed all these guys, they could have helped us out.
Jason looked at his friend and debated shooting him in the foot, but now they would really need all the help they could get. In the distance, he could see two assault shuttles coming down towards them, obviously the Confed troops they were expecting.
So, no hard feelings?
Jason asked the alien, still sprawled on the ground. It took one look at Crusher and then seemed to shrug, wobbling its head side to side.
It's not like they were my friends, it said. But I think I'll go ahead and make a discreet exit, seeing as how you're about to try and fight off an entire strike team with two people.
As it turned out, it wasn't a Confed strike team that the shuttles were bringing in. It was two. Both craft stopped a few hundred meters away and began disgorging troops, 20 in total. Jason lined up on the lead craft, switched over to max velocity on his weapon, and fired three shots. At least two shots hit the shuttle on the nose, and it seemed to turn inside out as the hypersonic penetrators tore through the alloy. The small ship exploded, breaking windows and sending some of the slower troops tumbling like ragdolls. The second shuttle pilot was no dummy and yanked his ship over and around a building before Jason could line up another shot.
We're in, Cage said. For all that damn good it'll do.
Let's move, Jason said. Rig the entryway and then let's get to the Say family.
Another last stand, Crusher complained, as he began pulling out explosives to prepare a nice surprise for the first breaching team.
At six ships total. The Solas and five heavy cruisers, Twingo said. Eight, if you count the Solas' support ships.
So much for the Confed opting for a discreet interdiction, Doc muttered. This much fleet muscle over this backwater planet is going to get people talking.
I don't think they care anymore, Twingo argued. The Nexus feeds are clogged with news about the attack on the Ashquarians. This would barely make a blip on the sensors right now.
Oh no, Doc said. Look up the specs we have in the database for the Solas.
It took Twingo a moment to figure out the interface at the co-pilot station, eventually being able to pull up the ship's name from the database Omega Force maintained on known capital ships.
So, the Solas is not really a battleship, they've just classified her as such because of size and the fact she's the only remaining vessel in a class that was retired from service over 70 years ago,
Twingo read from the entry.
The ship is actually a heavy bombardment cruiser meant to... Oh, that's not good.
That's what I was afraid of, Doc said. That ship isn't here to contain the system, or they wouldn't have needed to bring in five other cruisers. It's likely here as a fail-safe. If the strike teams fail, that ship will burn the city to the ground.
They wouldn't dare!
Twingo, the Confed Council just authorized the invasion of a neighboring sovereign power that they were trading partners with. You think they'll suddenly get squeamish about leveling a single city on some unimportant planet with no military of its own?
So, if the captain succeeds, that means everyone dies? Twingo asked rhetorically. I'll make the call. They'll need to...
Did you just cycle the rear ramp?
What? No! What the hell?
Twingo looked around to where the battle synth had been standing near the bridge entrance. It was now gone.
Uh-oh. You don't think...
He left the question dangling.
If he did, there's nothing we can do about it now, Doc said grimly. We're orbiting 500 kilometers out from shore over an ocean. Close the ramp back up and let the captain know the situation. I'd probably omit the fact Lucky may have jumped from a ship 10,000 meters in the air for the time being.
Chapter 23
Battleship that's moved into orbit is specialized for surface bombardment. If that strike team fails, it looks like the fleet is going to take out the whole city to make sure Venda doesn't escape.
So what are we supposed to do? Jason asked. Just let them take his family? It's likely that ship has orders to sanitize the planet no matter what happens here.
I'm just making sure you have all the information available, Twingo said. I'm not suggesting anything.
Fine. Thanks, Jason said. Start working your way towards us. We'll need an extraction from this location no matter what, since these assholes blew up our truck.
We still a go?
Crusher asked. They'd made it up to the third floor east wing where the family lived. Cage confirmed that four beings were still in there by slicing into the building's security system, but now they weren't sure what to do. Venda was likely barricaded inside, and now they'd effectively trapped themselves inside the building. They'd set traps and fortifications as best they could, but they still had to get inside the residence.
Yes, Jason said firmly. Leaving this family to the jackals won't help matters, and I'm not convinced that ship won't fire on this city no matter what happens.
That's a big risk to take, Captain, Kate said. If they were just going to glass the surface, why send the teams down at all?
Confirmation of the target, Crusher said. Once Venda is confirmed to be on site, the ship likely has orders to open fire. You don't move a piece of ordnance like that into position as a backup plan. You put it there because you plan to use it.
You don't think there's a chance they want this guy alive? Jason asked, now hesitant.
No, Crusher said firmly. You don't send this sort of force for an extraction. They're here to overwhelm any security he may have in place. They also probably don't know that as soon as they confirm the package, that battle wagon is going to open up and kill them too. They're completely expendable.
Let's try to get inside and then go over the finer points of this, Cage said, looking at the feed from the micro-drones he'd put aloft outside to watch the approaches. They're getting closer.
Let's just keep this simple, Jason said.
He removed his helmet and jogged down the short corridor to the residence's main entrance. He held down the call button and looked up into the camera over the door.
Venda Say, my name is... I recognize you, a voice came over the speaker. You're really the one it sent after me?
I don't know what you're referring to, Jason said. I'm here to try and get you and your family to safety. There's a Confed strike team, two of them, actually, and they're converging on this building.
There was a pause, and then the door slid open. Jason shrugged to his friends and then walked in, greeted by an alien he, too, recognized, even as distracted as he was by the large-bore plasma pistol that had been shoved in his face.
Talk!
You're the captain from that Confed battleship, Jason said. The one that gave us fuel after chasing us to that ancient relic.
Why are you here?
The pistol lowered fractionally.
Like I said, why are you really here? Who sent you?
Venda became more agitated as Cage and Crusher slunk into the room and closed the door.
A Keprian intelligence operative named Alloker has been tracking you, Jason said slowly. He thinks you may have some clue as to who or what is behind the takeover of the Confed Council. He wants to bring you in and debrief you.
Oh, I know what's behind it, Venda laughed humorlessly. Keprian, huh? Makes sense. They're in this up to their...
An explosion sent a hard jolt through the building and set off a whole slew of automated alarms.
That was the mine I planted at the rear entrance, Cage said. The breaching teams are to the building.
I paid a private security firm to extract us, Venda said. I sent the signal over an hour ago when I received word we'd been compromised. Where are they?
I didn't see anybody, Jason said. Crusher? Nope, nobody.
Damn amateurs, Venda snarled, before looking back at Jason. It would appear that I am at your mercy, given who is on their way up. Can you actually get my family out of here safely?
The odds are long, but we can do it, Jason said. How secure is this place?
I had it customized when it was being built, Venda said. The walls are armored, as are the ingress points. There's only one door, and the windows are hardened.
That's both good and bad, Crusher said. One way in gives us a natural choke point, but there's also only one way out.
We have a hatch to get on the roof that doesn't appear in any of the structural records, Venda said. But there's no way down from there.
Understood, Jason said. Cage?
That first blast has made them regroup, Cage said. They've split into three teams and are covering all the exits. It looks like they're going to carefully check the rest of the doors before trying to make entry.
Start harassing them with your little drone bombs, Jason said. Crusher and I will go out and try to engage them individually while you stay here and monitor things. Get a hold of Doc and tell him to get his ass here now. We won't have time to try to reposition and wait for pickup.
Once back out in the corridor, Jason stuffed his helmet back down on his head and activated the armor. There was a shimmering effect as it came up to full power, and then the effect dissipated.
Is that what I think it is? Crusher asked.
If you think it's active shielding based on the same principle that our ship's shields work on, then yes, it is, Jason said. Crusher pulled a blade and jabbed at it experimentally, watching as the shields flared and resisted the knife.
That has potential, he said. So, what's the plan?
Let's go down a floor and try to get into one of the units facing the main street, Jason said. We can pick a few off from the window and then reposition. Let's just stick and move and keep them guessing while waiting for the Phoenix. They made it to the second floor just as another jolt shook the building. People could be heard screaming and running from their homes. The building housed 9 individual residences over 3 floors and 3 wings, so the odds of civilian casualties had increased now that some of them appeared to be trying to escape. The unit that Jason wanted to get into was hanging wide open as the residents had left in such a hurry they hadn't bothered to lock up after themselves. The pair wasted no time in getting to the front-facing window, in time to see the team by the entrance roughing up everyone leaving, restraining them, and tossing them into the yellow and green vegetation that covered the ground. He motioned for Crusher to carve a couple of gun ports into the transparent composite material that the windows were made of. The blades sunk in with a hiss, and Crusher was able to make 2 oval ports without the troops on the ground seeing him.
"I'll watch the door," the big warrior said quietly. "Your weapon is more suited to this type of work."
Jason nodded and switched back to low velocity mode so he didn't frag the civilians that were restrained nearby. He was pleasantly surprised the strike team wasn't just killing them as they exited, given some of their other handiwork he'd witnessed over the years. He lined up a shot on the soldier nearest the door, waited until a non-combatant cleared out of the way, and squeezed the trigger. The body hadn't even hit the ground when he quickly moved and dropped 2 more before they were able to see where the incoming originated from and returned fire. Jason dove backwards as a dozen plasma bolts ripped through the window and into the residence.
"Heads up!" Jason called, crawling back to the door. "They'll be sending someone up."
Crusher just nodded and tossed a stun grenade down the stairwell before moving back away, following Jason further down the corridor.
"Doc, what's your ETA?"
14 minutes.
You have to do better, Jason said.
Whoomp! The stunner went off and Jason could hear 3 distinct voices cry out in pain. They rushed the stairwell and opened fire on the 3 that had been coming up to dig them out of the second floor unit, killing them quickly. Before they could get back out of the well, a second fire team came up behind the first, likely reacting to the grenade, and opened fire. Jason's armor flared brilliantly as plasma bolts splashed across the active shielding. The suit did an admirable job keeping the plasma shots from impacting his suit, but the heat buildup was intense, far worse than anything Jason had experienced in his older powered armor. He opened fire with a long sustained burst, shooting blind while the shielding was still flared and trying to dissipate the plasma shots. The result was immediate and dramatic. The incoming plasma bolts ceased as Jason's hardened projectiles tore into the 3 soldiers jammed up at the bottom of the stairs. The Confed team wore armor designed to be used against energy weapons, and it did next to nothing to stop the rounds from the railgun.
"You okay?" Crusher asked, pulling Jason to his feet. "Ow! Damn! Your suit is still smoking!"
"Getting pinned down in a narrow stairwell wasn't the best thing for it," Jason admitted, as the warnings scrolled across the inside of the visor. The power system had been taxed, and the thermal overload had taken its toll on the shield emitters, lowering their efficiency to 40%.
"Cage, what are they doing?"
"Moving to cover the exits and bringing up heavy weaponeers," Cage said. "Stand by, I'm going to start hitting them with my drone bombs and keep them distracted. From what I can hear, they're assuming there's a lot more of us inside than there really are, and they're hesitant to commit to one single charge."
"That's not going to last long," Jason said. "They'll come in force shortly, and when they do, we're well and truly screwed. Doc, where the hell are you?"
"Inbound," Doc's voice broke over the channel. "We have 2 more assault shuttles that are loitering in the area that will probably try to stop us."
"I don't need the details. I need you over the roof. Get it done," Jason said. "Cage, we're going to reposition on the opposite side of..."
"Captain? You might want to look out the front," Cage said in an odd tone.
Jason frowned and moved to where he could see out one of the narrow windows that lined the ends of the corridors.
No fucking way.
Standing in the middle of the street, facing the building, was the battle synth. It calmly surveyed the scene before its eyes flashed into brilliant crimson, and the whine of charging weapons could be heard even inside the building. The troops around the building were quick to redeploy, but it was obvious they were confused as to what the hell this newcomer was and what its intentions were. They were screaming unintelligible commands at it while it stood rooted to the spot.
"Did it fall out of the ship?" Crusher asked, peering out through the other window.
"Doc, are you currently over the target?" Jason keyed his comm.
"No, we're nearly there," Doc said.
"So you didn't come in and put the battle synth on the street in front of this building?"
"What? No, it's there?"
"What the hell is going on, Doc?" Jason snapped.
"It left while we were in a holding pattern over the ocean," Doc said. "We didn't want to distract you with the news, and we had no way to try and recover it if it sank. Apparently, it was on its way to you the whole time."
"Meaning that this model also has sustained flight modes," Jason said. "Now the million-credit question is, what is it going to..." "Holy shit!"
When two Confed troops approached it, the battle synth leveled its four arm cannons, two per arm, and opened fire. The plasma bolts vaporized the enemy troops, leaving the smoking stumps of their lower legs as markers to where they fell.
"Is he on our side, or just killing anything that comes close?" Cage asked over the comm.
"Either way, let's use it," Jason said. "Get the family up on the roof. We're on our way."
He made it halfway up the steps before stopping.
"Crusher, get up there and help Cage."
"Where are you going?" Crusher demanded.
I have to know," Jason said,
the sounds of battle becoming more pronounced outside. Crusher sighed and nodded.
"Trade me weapons, and I'll try to cover you from the roof as best I can," he said.
Jason tossed him the railgun and caught the heavy plasma rifle with two extra power cells in the sling.
"Go get him. Don't get dead.
Don't let Venda die," Jason called over his shoulder. "I don't want this all to be for nothing."
Jason raced down to the first level and saw that the door was no longer being covered, but the civilians that hadn't been captured on the way out were still cowering in the dubious cover of the lobby.
"Go! Get out through the back and get away from this place," Jason shouted at them.
When he emerged from the building, he could see that the Confed troops had rallied their remaining numbers, sought cover, and were now laying down withering fire to bring the battle synth down. He absently noted that the battle synth was protected by active shields before throwing a grenade at the troops clumped up behind what was left of the contractor's air car. When it blew, it killed two of them, forcing Jason to finish the third off with his rifle. The remaining troops that were coming at the battle synth from opposing angles and overlapping their fire weren't like the others. There were six of them, and the helmets were tall and narrow. A full Satiety brood, all six brothers. Jason had thought he'd spotted the telltale head of one earlier, but couldn't be sure. Satiety were fearsome fighters, but what made their family unit so dangerous was that broods had a sort of telepathy with each other that allowed them to coordinate and attack as a single entity.
"The second one from the right in that first group appears to be the brood leader."
"Where the hell have you been?" Jason demanded. "I could have used the help earlier."
"There have been some issues. If you survive this encounter, we'll need to discuss them for both our sakes."
"Wonderful,"
Jason ground out, as he opened up on the Satiety that Kaz had indicated was the leader. His attack immediately drew the attention of the others, indicating that Kaz was likely correct in its analysis, but now he had the problem of six broodmates coming at him at once. Their counterattack flared his shields and ruptured his weapon's plasma chamber. He barely had time to throw it away before it blew, but they still wouldn't let up. Now free from the overlapping fields of fire, the battle synth rocketed into the air and came down right in the midst of the second group. Jason saw that some sort of energy blades burst from its gauntlets, and it quickly went to work hacking through the three Satiety trying to swarm him. Jason turned back to his own fight, pulling his sidearm and rushing into the midst of the second group of three. They saw him coming and opened fire, the intensity of it causing his shields to flare, falter, and then fail altogether. Two power junctions blew out on the suit, and he felt an icy sensation on his left leg where it burned him.
He slammed a boot into the chest of the first Satyati before firing at the leader, grazing his neck and causing him to dive for the ground, howling in pain. Jason went for a finishing shot, but the third broodmate tackled him from the side, the force of the hit taking them both to the ground. Still, he held on, though, trying to wrestle Jason's pistol away while the other two regained their feet. Jason released the pistol, surprising the Satyati and causing him to jerk off balance. While he tried to maintain control of the pistol and himself, Jason pulled a knife from a sheath on his thigh and plunged it into the Satyati's neck. He felt a prickling sensation in his side that blossomed into unimaginable pain, but he ignored it and concentrated on the Satyati he was engaged with. While the alien gurgled and thrashed with the blade in his neck, Jason recovered his pistol and shot him in the head at close range. He looked up just in time to see that the other two still had their weapons trained on him, while their dead broodmate's body had him pinned, one of them holding a needler. The nasty little weapon fired small, thin darts at high velocity that could penetrate most body armor. His dead shields and soft pressure suit had offered no resistance, and he could feel the small projectiles tearing up his insides every time he moved.
"Any last?"
The leader's head simply disappeared, and Jason knew immediately that Crusher had made good on his promise of cover.
"Too bad he couldn't do that before you were perforated by 21 needles."
The last Satyati seemed to waffle for a moment, undecided, when a single plasma bolt hit him in the chest and sent him flying. Jason craned his neck to see the battle synth walking over. It grabbed the dead Satyati on top of him and tossed it off before offering its hand to help him up. Jason grabbed it hesitantly at first, but when he did, the machine gently and smoothly pulled him back to his feet.
"Lucky, is that you?"
The battle synth stared at him for a long moment before finally nodding. That simple gesture sent a flood of emotion through Jason, despite the fact he'd still not spoken. He took a step backwards, and the fire in his side from the needles flared up, causing him to grit his teeth.
"Captain?" Crusher asked over the channel.
"I'm good," Jason gasped.
"We're good. On our way up. Make sure Doc knows those other shuttles are still out there."
"No, they're not," Cage said. "Once the last of the strike teams was routed, they broke off and climbed for orbit. I don't think they were here to engage, at least not after you downed one with a handheld weapon. They were only supposed to contain outbound traffic from this area."
"That's not good," Jason muttered. "Come on, Lucky, we need to get to the roof."
Lucky grabbed the back of Jason's tactical harness with his left hand and pointed up to the roof with his right. Not understanding at first, Jason made the mistake of agreeing before clarifying.
"Yeah, we need to—"
"Ah!"
Lucky fired his repulsors and picked Jason up by the harness, rocketing both of them up to the roof. Normally, this would have been fine, actually preferable to hoofing it up the stairs, but with his injuries, Jason almost blacked out from the pain. He landed gently on the roof, but his legs were rubber and wouldn't support his weight. Once he collapsed in a heap, he saw a giant boot step into his field of view.
"You lost one of my favorite guns."
"Shut the hell up, Crusher," Jason moaned. "Kaz, can you do anything with this pain?"
"Stand by."
"Who the hell is Kaz?" Cage asked.
"Oops."
"I didn't say Kaz," Jason said. "I said, my ass, can you do anything with this pain? I was talking to myself."
"Did you suffer a head injury?" Cage asked after a moment.
"Can't rule it out," Jason said,
as the pain began to ebb away with Kaz manipulating the receptors via the implant and his army of nanobots.
"Where the hell is the ship?"
Even as he said it, the sound of engines could be heard over the wail of alarms through the small community. But they weren't his engines.
"They just don't quit, do they?" Crusher growled.
"Who is it? Is that your ship?"
Vendasay asked, his family huddled near him.
"Cage, get them to cover," Jason said. "That's not our ride. That's the other team that's been hunting you, and I don't think their goals align with yours of staying alive."
The unusual transport that Chenix 6 flew descended out of the clouds on a direct course. Since the tracker had been removed and it had taken them this long to catch up, Jason had to assume the Merc crew was working for the Confed.
"Doc, Jerg's crew just showed up," Jason said as he keyed his mic, but he couldn't hear his own voice in the helmet.
When his suit overloaded, it must have taken out the comm. Cage, let Doc know we have a hostile over the objective. Crusher, give me my weapon back. Before Jason could bring the railgun to bear, the ship roared over the building, opening up with the forward cannons and ripping up a section of the roof near the edge of the east wing. It was obviously meant as a warning.
Jurg is transmitting on an open channel, Crusher told him. He's demanding we hand over the Say family.
Jason didn't respond right away, trying to line up the quick little ship for a shot, but there was no way he could hit it while it was flying so erratically.
Tell him to piss off and then tell Doc to hurry his ass up, Jason said, before turning to Lucky.
You think you can give him a little surprise when he comes back for another run? Lucky nodded again and moved off apart from them. Jason could see the telltale shimmer of his shields coming back up.
Now he's saying we only have a few minutes to hand them over before the Confed opens up with that battleship, Crusher said. He's making a deal to split the bounty with us, 80-20.
Tell him 60-40 since we did most of the work for them already, Jason said, making a show of lowering his weapon and nodding to Lucky.
70-30? We get 30?
Deal. Go ahead and toss your weapon down, but make sure he knows the Phoenix is showing up soon.
Probably.
Jason heard Crusher's profanity-laced response to lock in the deal and saw the transport swing about slowly, ceasing its evasive maneuvering. He was tempted to try and snap off a shot at it, but if he missed, they'd be sitting right in the sights of its big guns. He stretched, feeling the tightness in his side, and discarded his now useless helmet along with the railgun.
Here he comes, Crusher said. He wants the family moved out and then us moved away.
Too bad, Jason said. Tell him we don't trust him to pay up and that we can just as easily make our own deal with the Confed for them.
He says we don't know his contact, so it wouldn't do us any good, Crusher said.
Jason just smiled as they got Jurg to admit it was the Confed that hired them. Likely Intel Section, as they were famous for contracting outside help if for no other reason than plausible deniability. It also made it easier to kill off an inconvenient asset when they were nothing but grubby mercs or bounty hunters. He held his breath as the transport moved in and settled to a hover 50 meters away from the rooftop. He could see Jurg pointing at him and gesturing to where Cage was with the family, looking agitated. Jason just smiled and shrugged, shaking his head. The merc captain stood up in his seat and could be seen shouting something, completely ignoring what he assumed was a programmable killbot milling around near the damaged section of the roof.
Now, Lucky! Jason shouted.
The words had barely left his lips when Lucky turned and fired his repulsors, flying in a shallow arc that landed him on top of the transport with a clang. Jurg was looking about inside his bridge and shouting at his crew, while Lucky wasted no time executing his plan. He ran to the starboard pontoon and opened fire with his cannons directly into the ship's engine. The emitters exploded in a flash of blue plasma, and the ship began to list to the right and sink. Jurg opened fire, but his guns were now trained at the sky as his ship spun away from the building and continued falling to the ground. The left engine was still operational, so it didn't lose all lift capacity, but the asymmetrical gravimetric fields couldn't keep the boxy ship aloft, and it was slowly spiraling downward. The ship hit the ground so gently that it barely kicked up any dust. Jason heard Lucky firing a few more shots before he flew back up over the lip of the roof and landed near the Say family. By the time Jason and Crusher got to the edge, the crew of the ship was already climbing out onto the dorsal surface.
Back, you coward! Jurg screamed at him.
Having a bit of engine trouble?
Jason called down, stepping back as one of the crew fired a plasma pistol at him. He just laughed and walked back while Jurg kept screaming insults, then switched to pleading.
You can't leave us down here, Burke. That battleship is going to open fire any minute. Take me with you, and I'll give you the entire bounty. Burke!
Tell Doc to approach from the south side, Jason said to Crusher, and waved everyone else over to him as the sound of the Phoenix finally arriving became louder and more pronounced.
Come on, everyone, we need to get the hell out of here before the Solas decides to do this the easy way.
By the time they were all filing up the ramp and into the ship, Cage warned him that the chatter over the comm in orbit was that the Solas was descending into a parked position over top of them.
Chapter 24.
What the hell were you doing? I could have walked here faster than that.
There were...
Move!
Jason cut Doc off and moved into the pilot seat. Whatever Kaz was doing to mask the pain was becoming less effective, and he saw stars as he shifted his body and the needles dug in a little further.
Is everybody in and secured?
Yes, Cage yelled as he ran onto the bridge and hopped into the co-pilot seat.
We have to go now! Go, go, go!
Jason crammed the throttle to the stop just as proximity alarms began blaring and the sensors were washed out by a blinding light. The Solas had opened fire. The Phoenix roared off ahead of the pressure wave caused by the powerful orbital cannon hitting right in the middle of the city. The building they'd been over was on the outskirts, so they had a head start on the spreading destruction. But Jason didn't want to climb up higher and risk being picked up by the battleship's sensors.
Cage, find me a big, sturdy building that's well outside the maximum effective radius of that weapon, he said, concentrating through the pain on keeping the big gunship skimming over the buildings.
His right display showed a view from the rear of the ship, and all he could see coming at them was a wall of fire and debris. Knowing this was a heavily populated city made the bile rise in his throat. It was one thing to hear about the Confed's new campaign of atrocities secondhand, but seeing the brutality up close was quite another.
I see what you're thinking, Cage said,
his four hands a blur on his control panels.
Stand by! I have a suitable site coming up. Fly to the indicators.
Jason angled over to starboard, keeping his bank shallow so he didn't shed off too much precious velocity. As it was, the ship was being pushed and buffeted by the leading edge of the shockwave, but they were already going as fast as he dared to push it so close to the surface. After a few minutes that seemed like a few hours, the wall of death began to flag, and the flames gave way to billowing clouds of dirt and debris, allowing the Phoenix to shoot well ahead.
There!
Cage said, highlighting a building on Jason's display. For some reason, he was having trouble integrating his neural implant into the ship.
It looks empty, too. Lucky us.
Jason could see that the massive structure was built out over the water and looked like a production facility for surface vessels. Given Thalia Prime's economic stature, it was likely that they still utilized ocean-going ships to move large cargo. The building appeared not to have any doors where it met up with the river that would eventually take ships out to sea, and the Phoenix's sensors weren't picking up any energy barriers.
Verify dimensions.
Verified, Cage said. We'll fit with room to spare. Set an altitude of 5 meters off the water and you'll be fine.
After double-checking the hard limits he'd set into the computer, Jason quickly descended towards the river, pulling up hard to a stop and spinning the Phoenix about before using the thrusters to push her backwards into the cavernous building. Relying on the external video feeds, he eased her back as far as he could so that the nose was well out of sight from anyone looking down from orbit. He debated putting the gear down and landing, but decided to lock the ship into a hover with the engines running, so that they'd be able to act in an instant if they were spotted.
Is this really a better idea than running? Twingo asked.
They'll be tracking ships that left the blast radius, Jason said, and those other cruisers will be identifying everything leaving and intercepting anything that looks suspicious. We'll wait here until they move on.
They may sterilize this whole system, Crusher said. They can't afford any ships leaving and telling about this.
I believe they can, a new voice said from the bridge entrance. Venda Say walked in on shaky legs and looked at the monitors of Doc's station that were displaying remote images of the destruction.
I've been waiting all these years for it to find me, but I never realized how much danger I was putting my neighbors in. You should have surrendered me, Captain.
It's a little late for that now, Jason said, not in the mood to be charitable, after seeing the scope of the destruction wrought for this one person.
I just hope what you know is worth the lives given to get it.
It's something we both know, Captain.
Venda turned to Jason.
Do you know what the being that's taken control of the Confed calls itself?
I don't, Jason said, dreading what he would hear next. It calls itself the Machine.
and it's exactly what you fear it is.
Jason felt lightheaded, and he released the controls of the Phoenix before he accidentally put her into a wall.
It couldn't be. He'd destroyed the machine. If it was gone, crushed into oblivion, how could it be here, now, in this quadrant? It reached out to us when you were still within the construct and we had just arrived at the edge of the system. At first, it wanted us to come down and disable what you had done, but there was no way to traverse the system that quickly. After that, it became irrational and demanded that we do something to save it, but it never really said what that should be.
We were under the impression the machine AI, which was actually just one of the AIs aboard the construct that had gone haywire, was destroyed, Jason said. Lucky and I had gotten to its processing core and destroyed it. Once it was gone, we were able to leave. It had relinquished control on the station. From what I'm hearing now, that wasn't the case. From what we were able to tell after the fact, the first communications from it were a ruse to gain access to our systems, Venda said. From there, it uploaded itself into our computers in sections. Once you saved us from that other species, and we fueled your ship and went our separate ways, we began to notice strange anomalies within our various subsystems, but they were so minor at first they were just written up and ignored. By the time we were pushing back into Confed space, however, I knew that something was seriously wrong.
Jason, Venda, and Cage were sitting on the bridge while the others rested. The Phoenix was still sitting at idle, hovering within the building while the skies darkened from the airborne debris. It had been two full Thalian days since the attack, and during that time they'd been monitoring whatever comm traffic they could to find out what might be happening outside. 3 hours prior, they'd begun hearing from search and rescue crews, so Jason assumed the Confed ships had moved on. He planned to wait another 5 hours to be sure before emerging from hiding and pushing out of the system.
When did you become aware that you had a stowaway? Cage asked.
His choice of words made Jason uncomfortably aware of the personality hitching a ride within his own head.
When we arrived on Arakoria to refuel and make some provisional repairs before going on to Philbin Major, it locked me in my quarters and began to negotiate, Venda said.
Arakoria was home to one of the Confed's largest production shipyards, but Philbin Major was the hub for fleet operations. If Venda took the machine there, it would have jumping-off access to damn near anywhere within Confed space.
I was first threatened, and then I was given assurances. It told me that all it wanted to do was streamline the government for the benefit of all, that it was compelled to perform its task of organizing chaotic systems. It wanted me to be its representative in the military, and told me that it had already begun the process of ensuring the compliance of those within key positions of the civilian government. At first, it didn't seem like a bad deal.
I'll bet, Jason laughed mirthlessly. But I can understand your position. If the system is already hopelessly corrupt, how much worse can a single actor make it, right?
That's generally what my thinking was, Venda admitted. Then there was the fact that it already knew everything about my family and threatened to have them tortured to death if I refused. Then it showed me that it was already securing the resources to do so. It was terrifying how quickly it moved to consolidate its own power. We'd returned to port, and I was finally able to get off the Matav, but the machine was already busy infiltrating Philbin Major's computer systems and propagating through the Confed Unified Defense Grid. I tried to report the incident through the shipyard's maintenance system to see if the engineers could purge the alien presence, but it was too late. Worse still, the machine knew I'd tried to stop it.
So you decided to activate your emergency escape plan, Jason guessed.
Indeed, Venda said. I'd always assumed it would only be necessary should I accidentally cross some powerful council member by killing one of their relatives in the line of duty. But I was happy I'd participated in the program nonetheless.
So why does the machine want you dead? It just wiped out an entire city to get you, Cage said. Do you know of some vulnerability?
Nothing of a technical nature, Venda said. Well, not really. I know that it can only exist on certain types of computers in this region. The core aboard the Matdaf was the latest quantum type from Kepri, and even it was only barely suitable. It can easily reach out through connected systems, but it can only exist as a sentient being on processing cores that are compatible with itself.
This is true.
The biggest threat I am to the machine is that I know that it is essentially a piece of software, Venda continued. It has quickly and decisively secured power through fear and bribes, playing the puppet master, while everyone assumes this is just the normal ebb and flow of power within the core worlds. If people were to learn that the sudden, brutal shift in policies was being driven by a corrupt bit of programming, I don't think it would take long before the machine found itself purged. It is for these things I know, that nobody else does, that I think this Alokur you spoke of has been pursuing me. Either that or I have willingly played into a trap. Where do you think it actually resides right now? Jason asked. We did some checking. Your old ship was decommissioned and scrapped. I couldn't possibly begin to guess, Venda said. It's far too clever to have only a single copy of itself residing on an obvious system, and there are many of the new quantum cores being installed throughout the governmental systems. Jason didn't respond. The shock of learning that the corrupted AI from the machine had returned to Confed space was wearing off, and was now replaced with the dull ache of guilt. It wasn't just the guilt of having led the way to the infernal thing in the first place, but for allowing any ship to return and risk even the knowledge of the ancients to make it back. Even now, he was looking out the canopy at the aftermath of wholesale destruction and the slaughter of innocents, because he'd taken action and denied the machine something it wanted. Even hearing Venda's story, he wasn't able to convince himself it had been worth it.
I think we're clear, Captain, Cage said. I've heard three different commercial ships deeper in the system talking about the Confed battle group meshing out.
We'd better get the hell out of here, then.
Jason slid his seat forward and locked it into position. It won't be long before the damage control and containment teams are out here. The suspended particulate in the air was still so heavy that Jason had to bring up the nav hazard shields on the way out of the atmosphere. Cage busied himself with recording the atrocity with every sensor, from every angle. The higher they climbed, the worse it looked. Once they broke into black sky, Jason flipped the display off and concentrated on flying to their mesh-out point. The lump of ice in his stomach had turned and was now burning white hot. Someone would pay for this.
Chapter 25.
The Thalia operation was messy, but successful.
I have reviewed the sensor data from the Solus personally, the machine said. I am inclined to agree with you that our objectives have been met, though I'm disappointed that we have no physical proof. Even in the absence of that proof, however, it seems the Solus was able to eliminate two troublesome elements. With Vendace and Omega Force both dealt with, I am able to fully concentrate on the task at hand. We are on the verge of total success, Minister.
Squeeze said nothing. He had watched the sensor recordings too, and his feelings about what he'd witnessed were vastly different than those of his boss.
You have doubts?
No, Squeeze said too quickly before recovering. No, of course not.
That's good, the voice purred.
Audio was the only form of direct communication Sklees had ever had with his new master. He was extremely curious about what species he could be, other than not from this quadrant, as he'd been told. Even the name gave no clues. The being that had become the de facto monarch of the Confed had recently begun referring to himself as the Machine, an obvious pseudonym.
Have courage, Minister.
You're far too important to lose faith now. With the Ishquarian campaign concluded, there will be an upswell of protests and calls for talks. Your job is to undermine those efforts, understood?
I do, Sklees said. My staff is already out in front of it.
I knew I picked the right person when I came to you, the Machine said. You may leave.
I've just realized you've never given me a title by which to address you, Sklees said after floundering a bit, unsure what to say.
But I have. I am the Machine.
I would expect something more grandiose for a being that is poised to wrest control of the Quadrant's only superpower from its current government, Sklees said.
Titles and status are the conceit of all dictators, and often their downfall. Why should I care what I am called, or if I am even known, when the results are the same? I will be in control. I will be the nameless, faceless power behind the council, and the people ruled will be none the wiser for it. If you give them something to focus their anger and frustration on, they will organize and revolt. Lie to them and tell them that everything is just like it's always been, and they'll never suspect the truth, the Machine said.
But why Machine? It sounds so industrial.
Because the Confed is a machine, and I am the Confed. We're all but cogs and wheels that drive something greater than we ourselves could ever hope to be alone. Viewing things in this way provides clarity of purpose your previous forms of government have lacked. When we all do our part, the machine runs smoothly, to design. When one of those parts begins to wear or fails completely, the whole begins to fail, to one degree or another. And what do you do with faulty parts in a machine, Minister?
You replace them after you rip them from the whole and discard them without a moment's hesitation or undue emotional attachment. Then you replace that part with something that can do the job equally well or better. It is in that way that the machine runs in perpetuity.
The machine fell silent as Sklees digested what he'd just heard.
Everything fails. Everything has a lifespan. Everything, Sklees insisted.
Only when those things are designed to fail, the machine said calmly. You, for example, have a finite life. Barring anything unforeseen, you could be expected to operate from 65 to 100 years. This is not the way of all things. Some things are meant to last forever.
I see, Sklees said, unsure if he was being educated or threatened.
He left as quickly as his dignity would allow, what little of it he had left. He also wanted to be well clear of his boss before other uncomfortable questions came up. The machine had been obsessed with finding this MIA fleet captain who had commanded a battleship that wasn't even in service anymore. The amount of resources that were thrown at finding him was alarming. What did this captain know? Sklees didn't dare reach out to his contacts in the intelligence community to try and find out. The machine knew everything, seemed to be everywhere. If he began asking the wrong questions, he had no doubt his own untimely, though deserving end, would come sooner than later.
This is unbelievable, Alloker breathed
after Venda Say finished his prepared briefing to the room.
Believe it, Jason said,
I've had first-hand interactions with this machine. It's ruthless. The Phoenix had rendezvoused with one of Mach's heavy cruisers after leaving Thalia Prime so that Venda could tell his story to all the major players. During most of the slipspace flight, Jason had been unconscious as Doc worked tirelessly to remove the needles from his body and allow him to heal from the considerable damage they'd done. When they arrived to the set coordinates, they were hustled into the larger ship's hangar bay, and then it meshed out of the system almost immediately. They looked around the table at the unlikely collection of beings, all brought together out of such extraordinary circumstances. Mach had been quiet during most of the briefing, while Alokar had been quite agitated at the news a sentient program was behind the Confed's new direction. The person there that surprised him most, and whom he almost didn't recognize, was Confed Councilman Sklease. He'd had to be reminded by Crusher that he was the one who had arrived on scene when they'd stopped Christoph's first son, who had been using Daddy's money to fund his own little revolution.
"So, what do we do with this information?" Mach asked.
"This won't stop with one empire toppled and one city burned to the ground," Sklease warned. "This machine has plans to bring the entire quadrant to heel. And I think if it happens by force, all the better for him. There's a genuine sadistic streak behind his actions, and I fear the suffering is only beginning."
"That doesn't answer my question," Mach said. "What are we, the individuals in this room, supposed to do about this? The Ashquerian Empire lasted less than 3 days against the Confed. You can't seriously be considering we take it on."
"Not directly," Alokar said. "But we are not normal soldiers, nor are we without means."
"You're talking about an underground," Jason said. "An insurrection."
"Precisely," Alokar said. "Asymmetrical warfare, as you so cleverly put it during one of our conversations, Captain Burke."
"I didn't make that term up," Jason waved off the compliment. "You all know better than I do what this entails. Is this really the path we want to go down?"
"It is no longer a matter of want, young captain," Sklease said somberly. "And what of you? What are your thoughts?"
Jason took a deep breath and let it out slowly before answering. "I'm largely responsible for this thing being here," he said finally. "My choice has been made for me. I'll do what I can to stop it, whether it's with you or some other resistance outfit. I haven't talked to my crew yet, so it may just be me and the Phoenix."
"Not a pair I'd bet against on any day," Alokar said. "I too am in. This has been my fight since before I knew what I was even fighting. Finding out what the enemy is has been both surprising and terrifying. But at least I now have a target." "I will offer what support I can," Sklease said. "Unfortunately, my closeness to the machine makes me of limited use. I won't be able to risk meeting with you after this, but I will work to pass on information through intermediaries. We must be careful with what intel I provide, however, and resist the urge to act on every minor scrap. If the machine suspects you have an inside source of information, it will not take him long to discover who it is, and I will be of little use with my head removed."
"The Ashquerian Empire was my home," Mach said. "I had hoped to one day return there when I was old and no longer of any concern to the new generation in power. I believe my organization can be of great use, but we will need to be careful, as the councilman said. If I am suspected, and the Confed moves against the Syndicate in force, it will be a short, pointless fight."
"Are we in agreement?" Sklease asked.
"I believe we are," Mach said. "We fight."
Jason stood when the rest of them did, his heart racing. The coming days would be dark and dangerous, but the feeling of having a purpose so great was intoxicating. He was careful not to speak for the rest of the crew, but he was fairly certain what their choice would be given the alternative.
"I don't think we have a choice," Crusher said, when Jason presented his case later that evening.
They were all sitting on the back ramp of the Phoenix, still inside the hangar bay of Mach's cruiser.
Galvator is a tiny, independent system. They're at great risk if the Confed decides it might like to have some Galvetic conscripts in the ranks.
Fear is a single planet, but at least it's a member world, Cage said. Not much of note,